Hello. I'm not a performance expert, but I've been a web developer for long, long years, so I know all the pain about web developing across different browsers. So when I was asked to talk today about Firefox, how we perform, I was like, that's good, but actually it's more interesting to see how we can accelerate the web as a whole and actually make it easier for developers to build fast websites. Because I find there's a bit of a disconnect between what we're doing here, talking to each other about expertise on performance, and what you see on web design conferences that actually say like, yeah, great, put drop shadows and 3D transformations on everything, and 15 gradients are probably a good idea as well. First of all, I'm actually so jealous of your name, like Gentle Core. That's like something out of a Harry Potter, like a mythical being. This is really, really nice. Step down from hardcore, yeah. So, when people ask me how fast is Firefox, then I actually normally, I can talk about some of the things we do, but my answer normally is it's so fast that it arrives daily and nightly. So what I talk to you about today, and I'm recording my talk here, it's not being filmed sadly enough, but I'm recording it, and I want to upload my slides later on, I could give you information right now at this moment, and next week they'd be totally outdated. So what is the point of comparing numbers of browsers and how fast the current JavaScript engine is when we don't see what's coming in the future? So browsers have become this moving target for web developers, and a lot of web developers are actually annoyed by that. Like we said earlier, it's great that we have automated update, but a lot of developers are like, okay, I want to test for the older one as well if our end users don't update. In Chrome, that's not possible, but sometimes it has to be a choice for people. So, because your web, the web out there and your end users are not like your pet browser. I wished everybody would use the same browser as me, or Chrome, or Opera. But there's people out there that are actually tied into old systems. Chrome Frame is an issue that helps with that. But you cannot predict this. Your end users have completely different browsers than you. And as a web developer, you're always in this wonderful world of like, look how fast these coolest newest browsers are, and what are the other ones? What do I have to do about this? Okay, no problem. We put 12 polyfills in and 20 different JavaScript libraries, and then Internet Explorer 6 is also supported. How does it perform? I don't want to test for it anymore, but we have to. So it's really hard to say what the web out there does. And the numbers of Firefox are out there. So if you're here for numbers of Firefox, go to arewefastyet.com, and there's even nice graphs and stuff. So it's like colorful and things, and there's nothing to paint out, but numbers are there, so you can find them there. Because browsers to me are much more than software. Browsers are the interface between us and between users and the internet. And they make that their own thing. When Firefox came out with personas, you know, like changing the background colors and having Justin Bieber instead of a search bar and these kind of things, I was like, oh my God, who needs this? And then I saw the numbers, how many people use this? And I was like, okay, I have no idea what my users are out there. So whatever we do in our browsers, people are ready to install 10,000 add-ons to mess up with our experience out there. And that's the big problem that we have. But that's a good thing as well, because it's people's browser, not our definition of what a browser should be like. So as a developer, that can be really annoying, because my browser is not the one of my end users. Like, I probably am on a MacBook Air here, and it's probably faster than most of my users if I do an insurance software company, or if I do something that for the BBC. The BBC wrote an own JavaScript library because they had to support old browsers that something like YUI did not support. In the end, that was wasted time, but for that time, there was no other chance of doing that. So our users' browsers is actually what we should be knowing, but we don't. We don't know what people are. The only stats out there are statcounter.com, and that's something that people have to install on their websites. So that's already a captive audience. So those numbers lie to you already. So we have to think about that a bit. So working for Firefox or starting in Mozilla, the fun thing that you get is like every 2 minutes you get something on Twitter, because people know where to reach you, but they complain that Firefox is slow and I should fix it. They don't give you normally more information. It's a more of an emotional response, like, it doesn't work for me, please fix it. And you're like, okay, what is the problem that you have? And then you normally don't get any information whatsoever. It's just, it's slow. And you're like, fair enough. What if have you been doing like 3D cubes with videos on each side again and the WebGL game in the middle? Yeah, that might be slow. That normally is the idea of it, like especially when you've got 500 tabs open as well. Because that's what we have. Web development is generally seen as not coding, so a lot of developers actually start using JavaScript, start using CSS, and do completely random things, and then complain to browser vendors why it's slow, instead of understanding the technology. I think there's a big problem in our market that that product managers think that anybody can write JavaScript and CSS, no matter if they're passionate about it or not. And it's actually not software. It's building interfaces that humans have to use. So you should have somebody who's really passionate about those technologies build them, and not just somebody who was unlucky enough to be in the meeting room at that time. And you have, when you look at our end users, and we have all these tests with these wonderful test pilot studies that we have, some of them must have superhuman strength. Because one guy was complaining, oh, my browser, every time it starts up, it's so slow. And I'm like, well, first of all, mine doesn't ever shut down, but that's Windows for you. You know, you shut down the machine, it shuts down the browser completely. And I'm like, why is it slow? And he's like, well, I've got 512 tabs, and it takes ages to open them. Who can take in 512 tabs? What's wrong with you? But like that's, I really have to have 512 tabs open. That's how I work. And I'm like, I really want to see your brain. This must be interesting. Or we had bookmark stats where people had 35,000 bookmarks in the browser. Not in folders, just this one big list. And they were like, why does this scroll so slowly? And they're like, because it's 35,000 items. Have you ever tried to go through an Asta catalog? It's the same thing, you know? So analyzing user behavior with these things is a wonderful thing, and more browsers should do that, and more browsers should actually release the data of that as well. One interesting fact about performance we found is that the private browsing mode is used for 5 minutes at a time. Makes you wonder about the performance of our end users, or actually the performance of travel websites or e-commerce websites, because everybody uses private browsing mode to buy a wedding present or to book a holiday for their wife without telling them, right? This is what private browsing mode is for, by definition. And it annoys me a bit, because we throw out all these things years and years ago for web developers, what to do with the web not to slow it down. We had the Yahoo best practices. That was the first thing. And then Steve Saunders got these bags of money from Google and left. Or something like that happened, I think. And we got page speed best practices out of a sudden, and all of them, they cover each other quite well, and it's good. There's more information out there, and people can get more out there. There's web page test from AOL, which is a really cool website. Just put your site and gives you screenshots how it rendered, at what time, at what seconds, and so on. And then there's lots and lots of other rather seedy web performance sites cropping up as well, because it's a big hot topic. So we're like, oh yeah, you've been a consultant talking to people about COBOL. That web performance thing is very interesting as well. Probably you should make a website about this and tell people about something that you heard from Yahoo. So the real question is like, who do we trust with this? And why does things like that happen? People go and say, okay, my CMS does all this performance stuff for me. I use a CMS. They're probably clever enough and they read all the stuff that Steve writes about and other people write about, so I don't have to do it. This is out of the box an open source content management system that has now 4 CSS files, 5 scripts, a few inline scripts, 5 more scripts, and so on and so forth. It is not hard to concatenate CSS and JavaScript. There's even an Apache module for that. But people don't use it yet because they trust the software to do it for them rather than to have it do themselves. So why Drupal out of the box, for example, doesn't concatenate them is beyond me. But this is what we have to fight as performance fans. So the best about this was that somebody found a bug that Internet Explorer only loads 31 style sheets, and then it doesn't load the next style sheet. And at first time somebody complained about that on Twitter, I was like, what is wrong with you? Why do you need 31 CSS files? And in Drupal, it's the case that every module has its own CSS file, and it just gets added to the main header of the document and just put in there. And Internet Explorer says, like, after 31, because of some archaic 32 floating point number thing, like, nah, I don't want that other one. That's probably ugly. I render the others, but not this one. So these kind of bugs are wonderful to find because of these content management system things, but it's something we should be fixing, because people should not have to undo what their content management system has done just to have a performant website out there. GitHub, for example, is a wonderful website. I use it for everything, and you find cool people there to hire, you find great products to use, and it's a fast-performing, snappy website. Everybody uses it daily. And the fun thing about it is if you then dive deeper out of a sudden, and there's no styling in there that needs a lot of CSS if you think about it, and you actually go to the developer tool and you actually look at the style, then you find, first of all, that there seems to be quite some CSS in there. So, okay, so let's scroll down and see what's going on. Let's scroll down a bit more. Let's scroll down a bit more. Let's go to the kitchen, make a coffee, get a PhD, finish a book, translate it into Kiswahili and back into English. And we find it's 22,212 lines of CSS in 3,711 rules. Now, GitHub are clever people. I know them. How that happens, I don't know. But the site performs fast still. So that's against everything that we say you should be doing, but it still happens. But there's no excuse for that amount of CSS, especially when it comes to maintaining it. But hey, it's running. Let's not change it. It's magic. It's CSS stuff. We don't want to think about that. So we use GitHub to test our own style sheet debugger for performance at the moment. Much like Memolane, the company that does these like social graph of your website, uses my Twitter account for load testing, which is quite interesting as well. Which brings me to our developer tools. And why the problem is with developer tools. This is Zynga, released an open source scrolling and pinching and zooming scroller JavaScript that you can use that works on desktop and works on tablets. And they said they tested it for 4 weeks and they couldn't see tablets anymore. They needed a holiday after that. But it's really cool, performant, and wonderful. Joe Hewitt also released Scrollability, which is another one of those tools, but only works on WebKit, and said, like, well, yours is really not fast. It behaves like a dog on iPad 1, and iPad 2 is quite okay, and big geek fight between the two, handbags out and proper smashing each other. And the guy from Zynga, Paul Backhouse, analyzed what was going on, and he found the only thing why his didn't perform well was these form fields here. Because he had a debugging mode on that wrote values into a form field on iPad 2, it behaved really, really slowly. He turned off the debugging, and all of a sudden this thing was perfect. So debugging tools give you a wrong impression of what the performance of your website is. So testing something with a debugging tool on probably already is a skewed way that your users would see it. So it would be much more interesting to fire something on the command line and see how the browser renders it and so on and so forth. And that's where Firebug came in. Firebug, when it came out, was magic. As a web developer, I started liking my job again because I didn't have to use alerts to basically find out when something in JavaScript happened and then have this endless loop in an alert, pressing 15 times. And Firebug made all of that unnecessary. I also realized I can right-click an element and find out why the background is not dancing hippos but only green because some CSS or some image wasn't loaded and so on and so forth. And we were like, this is it? This is what web developers need? Awesome. Firebug, we're done. And then we cloned it. Like, I remember actually Opera came to us at Yahoo and said, like, what do you guys, Dragonfly, what do you think a debugging tool should have? And we're like, well, the same as Firebug, really. So it happened. The Chrome tools had the same as Firebug. The Safari tools, after you went to the command line of the operating system to turn on the debugging tools in the browser, which is quite interesting. Looked the same as Firebug again. And then Firebug became editable. You can write extensions to Firebug, YSlow being a big one. And then these debugging tools became more complex and complex. And all of a sudden, you need screencasts to understand a debugging tool. And you have all these tabs that you never heard of about, like what's this net thing and what's this CSS thing. And like it becomes much more complex. There's not much real estate you can play with from your X point of view. But we put more in that because every developer finds one edge case that every developer needs. It's actually three people needing it, but we just put it in Firebug to make sure. So, and that way the developer tools become slower and bigger and annoying. So we thought we rewind and go native. This doesn't mean we go naked or we be doing things like that. But we just said, okay, Firebug is there. We have a full person on Firebug. Firebug was never a Firefox tool. It was never a Mozilla tool. We have a full person dedicated to maintaining it and keeping it as it is, but we thought it might be much better to rethink how can we make developers perform better? How can we make developers not waste their time with developer tools that are actually hard to learn or actually interfere with their real day-to-day performance on the sites? So the first thing we did is the web console. There's no magic there. It's the same console as everywhere else. And it has autocomplete in the HTML stuff and shows you all the loading of CSS, JavaScript, and web developer. Command-Shift-K turns it on a Mac, and out of a sudden you have all the things without starting the whole of Firebug. Because when you start the whole of Firebug, it runs in memory, and it actually slows down the whole page. This little thing just pops on the top or at the bottom or on the right on the side, so you can actually move it around the screen now as well. Because up front, we had it on the top of the screen. A lot of people are like, what is going on there? But we wanted to make sure that you realize this is not Firebug. This is something new that's coming. And the other day, I caught myself typing Unix commands in there, which was not useful. But it's just a command line interface, so you get used to that. The style inspector is the thing for CSS people to realize what's going on there. And it has been improved a lot for Firebug, so it actually gives you not only the styles that how you applied, but also the styles that the browser itself applied to it. Because sometimes there's errors that way that you can't really find out why something doesn't have the rounded corners because it was overwritten by native styles. So we actually make these pretty right now. Right now it's just very basic, but there's a few styles out there that actually get released. And this was the resource hog. This was the real big problem where debugging got slow. I mean, if you're on a slow machine, you have Firebug, and you went through the page like pop, 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 rather than you always miss the one paragraph that you wanted to hit and miss the other one next to it and so on and so forth. So that was always the slow bit. So we said, okay, this is great, but we make it one tool of many, not like part of the main tool. Because debugging is one thing, but actually what you want to do to a degree is also develop in the browser. Why not? It's like, why do we have to go through our text editor and then send something to a server and to a build script and blah, 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 and try everything out before we actually can see it? I've written most of my CSS on my blog and other not pretty things in the web developer toolbar directly in the browser and then copied and pasted it out and saved it on my hard drive. And the browser can be as much a developer tool as a debugging tool. So one thing we put in, which is one of the first steps, there's a scratch pad. And the scratch pad allows you to write longer JavaScript, because probably all of you were on the command line one time and tried to write this massive function to try something out and then forgot this line break didn't work and so on and so forth. So now you can write JavaScript in the browser and try it against the current document. So this is great for debugging more complex things. And you can also, instead of just running the whole JavaScript you have in this editor, and as you can see it has color coding and everything, you can also highlight parts of the script and run parts of the script. So instead of running a JavaScript and putting it on your server and putting in your build script and building the new app and finding out you forgot something, you can quickly try things out in the site itself. So it's like Grease Monkey on steroids, if you think about it. And I think it's incredibly powerful to just be able to try different versions out and then copy them back into your real product and find out what's going on there, rather than going through the whole build process every single time before you try something new. You can navigate the page visually. I showed it before, but it's much, much prettier than it used to be. Like in Firebug, I always had to go out there. I just had some color, some background color. So now we gray out the rest of the page rather than and only highlight the thing that you want to have. And you've got these breadcrumbs down there, so you can actually navigate from element to find out what's going wrong there. So it's much, much faster than the old one used to be. And you can start styling in the browser itself. So if you just start a new style sheet, this is a demo that when somebody taught other people about CSS. So instead of making screencasts, you just open the editor in the browser and you change the background to this color, or you put a border on things, and it smoothly transitions from one to another. So it's a great example to show people how CSS works, or JavaScript, or whatever you want, directly in the browser. And in the end, you've got a save button or an import button to load files from the hard drive as well. So you can edit the thing directly in the browser and make it incredibly beautiful, as you can see, because that was obviously developer designing. So all of this, I think, is made to make developers build faster, because we spend far too much time analyzing things that are already been built. But if you look at the real market and what we're doing day to day, our products change weekly, daily. So the things that we test and we think are final will have a new design iteration by the time we finish with our testing. So instead of thinking about how to actually test these things, we should think about how do we build it and how do we stop people from doing stupid things while they're building it. And it's not the kitchen sink. It's not like one developer tool to rule them all. You have to have everything in that you ever need. A CSS person does not need the net tab, really, if he just wants to know, or if she just wants to know why that background is not being applied. But we always think like there's one tool and it does everything. And instead of this, we just have a suite of tools that all of them do something different. And that way we can extend the offering for developers infinitely without having to actually slow down the browser, without having one tool, one memory hog in there that takes over everything. So, of course, as mice are terrible to use, we also have the whole thing as a command line. So you can actually say highlight and then give it a CSS query, and then it highlights the part of the document. So all of these tools can be turned on and off with your keyboard. That makes it accessible for people who only can use a keyboard, and also makes it much faster for most developers who actually like keyboard shortcuts. I never use a desktop wallpaper because I never see my desktop. I just switch from app to app all the time. So I need a command line that allows me to control the whole document and the developer tools themselves is a very, very powerful thing for power users that are used to just using the command line. Now, as we don't like things that are easy and simple and a bit confusing, a lot of people come up with new languages constantly right now. JavaScript is not easy to understand for somebody who comes from another world of Java or C++. So we come up with new languages that actually work around the issues that JavaScript has. One of them is CoffeeScript. People like writing CoffeeScript because you don't have to do all the things that you do in JavaScript that don't work properly. Now, the issue with that is that you write a CoffeeScript, you write a JavaScript, the JavaScript is generated from CoffeeScript, there was a JavaScript error somewhere, it gives you a line number. And you're like, nah. Okay, that's great, because it's the generated JavaScript. So what source mapping means is that you actually get two error numbers. You get the line number that is the error of the JavaScript and the line number in the CoffeeScript. So you actually debug both of them, and you don't have to worry about the line number because you know where in CoffeeScript you made a mistake rather than in the generated JavaScript. And that's incredibly powerful. That could be moved on to things like Sass or Compass or Less as well, so you don't have to write CSS with all the vendor prefixes and so on and so forth. A lot of people don't understand why their HTML might be a performance problem or why it might be actually a maintenance problem. So templating makes it easier to just put some HTML in there, especially also just client-side templating, and create incredibly wonderful HTML constructs that are really, really complex and do a very simple thing. But as we only look at the PHP, at the Python, at the Ruby, and these kind of things, and never at the output HTML, we wonder why. So a few tools that we're working on with this is, for example, that in the next Firefoxes that are coming out, View Source now highlights parsing errors in HTML5. So if there's a parser error and the browser did something to fix it magically, like it sadly enough does, then it actually tells you in the CData comments that something went on there that actually was going on wrongly. So you know where your HTML fails rather than having to know the HTML with every little trick that the browser does wrong. So that's a very powerful thing. This is not validating the HTML. It just shows you when there was a parse error. And that's incredibly powerful if you just look at View Source quickly rather than having to validate your source files and the generated files and these things. Now, where it gets really crazy is Tilt. Tilt is something that an intern from Google actually built, and then he came to us. This is the source view, and okay, I use indentation, so that's good. Most people don't, so you really don't know how complex your HTML is. This is my blog right now. It's not much. It's just a WordPress out of the box. So what Tilt gives you is a WebGL interface to your website. So you can see the website in a 3D view, and you know how deep your HTML goes into the source views. We also have one that when you tilt your laptop, it goes with it, but that was just a fun thing. But this is really cool because I can actually click on the elements and I get the name of the elements and the content of it and the CSS of it. So I realized rather quickly how I actually messed up with my HTML much easier than indentation would tell me. And you can, if your computer's not fast enough, you can just do the outlines, you can change the colors and these kind of things. So in my blog, I'm like, yeah, I'm okay. It's not that deep. It's not that much of a problem. But let's see how other people are doing there. And it's actually quite an interesting thing how people use these tools when you give them out for them. So let's visit Facebook City. because I call it Facebook City because that's the Facebook interface. And if you now switch to Tilt, which is now an add-on for Firefox, which you can download and it works in the current one. And if you look at how Facebook is nested, then it looks a bit different. And I still have no clue what that little tower on the right-hand side is. But it basically shows you a few things where you wonder what happens. And I always, I mean, I like HTML. I like writing it by hand. I like understanding it. And other people treat it like, okay, we write whatever we want. Not saying that, but I was actually confused by Google.com. Because it's not much HTML, but what is going on there? Why is the search box 14 levels deep? That's just really odd. But I guess there's a reason for it, probably GWT or something like that. But it's just a very cool new way to make people aware of what they've been doing. And you can actually navigate and actually edit the file directly in that 3D interface inside the browser. And yeah, I mean, we have computers that are fast. Why not make them slower with something cool? So, in essence, to me, browser performance is a given nowadays. All the browsers are competing on making the best JavaScript engines, better CSS rendering. We got all this cool shit happening in the engines themselves. But it should be the given of the browser, not the goal of it. We should not have to undo what other developers have been doing just to make it perform fast in browsers. And that means that all of us have to go out and talk to people who are not aware of web performance or don't want to know about it and actually make them aware of it and about the benefits that they're doing. And also make them aware of the things, how they make our life hell by doing things wrongly. Because performance people do the same to developers from time to time. Like if you minify something and you pack it up and you don't put a comment on top of that it is actually minified and packed up and the source code is somewhere else, you will find some maintainer that opens up VI and starts editing live in a minified file and calls you a bastard because it's really hard to do. So we go further with this, and as we say, when the performance is there, let's bring the browser to the web, but also the web to the browser. And there's a few things that we're working on. It's just as an add-on now at the end. We got Browser ID. That one actually allows any user out there to log into websites with a single click of a button rather than having a username and a password for every website out there. And usernames and passwords are a bad idea. When Lifehacker got hacked, quite ironic really, it had 20,000 users with the password Lifehacker. Really? You wondered why you were hacked? This is just amazing. But we ask people constantly about new passwords. So Browser ID for a developer also means you can put a JavaScript in your page with a single HTTP request and something on your own server or a second call from your server to an API key. You have a validated user. You have a user that is really the person that they pretend that they say that they are, and you can actually start a session with them. And the open framework of apps is another thing we're working on right now, that instead of going to an app store to find applications, you could actually put a meta tag in your main page to tell you there's also an app available for your page if you want to switch to that one. And once you have the app installed, we're thinking about rewriting links for you to open in the app rather than open in another tab. So there's lots of information about that out there. I think it's important that we don't forget the web when we think about apps right now, because we already have a distribution model. It is called the web, and it has millions of users out there. Why should I try to get these millions of users somewhere else when they're already out on the web? And performance to me is a conversation between everybody involved, and not just a fixing process in the end. But what I heard today and yesterday was a bit like, oh, these web developers do everything wrong, so we have to find tools to fix what they've done before. That's too late in the game, and it's actually not useful for anybody. So let's talk about performance, and talk about performance of browsers as well, and forget that you can actually tell any user that they have to use one or another browser. It is their choice, it is their freedom, and you shouldn't take that away from them. And that's all I had, so thank you very much.